It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest today, Rich Nelson with Allendale. You know, Congress can see a problem coming into the road and they just step on the gas. Maya McGinnis is president for the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget.
I think there's a real risk we aren't going to get this done without an emergency or crisis. I've got to emphasize that seems absurd to me that a country as strong with us as we are with so much warning would let a crisis push us to act, but I fear that's going to happen. We have just released a break glass plan. So in case of emergency, there would be a plan that would be on the shelf that lawmakers would embrace that would first make sure any stimulus is really targeted and only what's necessary, no Christmas tree stimulus. Second, that it would be fully offset using super paygo, so $2 for one. Third, we'd have some policies that we would phase in that would automatically put us on a better trajectory. And finally, we would include a fiscal commission.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Rich Nelson. Rich is chief strategist with Allendale. Hey, Rich, welcome back to the show.
Thank you much. I sure appreciate it, Tony. I appreciate having me on, and certainly for our key discussion topic for us today, I think this is going to be a good one here.
Now, for those who don't know who Allendale is and what you do, what's that elevator speech?
Sure. Sure. So we've been in the Northeast Illinois area, actually helping farmers across the nation for, I want to say, over 35 years, probably actually 40 years by now, if I remember right. So what we do is we do research in agricultural markets, and we provide brokerage and instruction in crop marketing and livestock marketing to the nation's farmers. And along with that process, we do both an August yield survey, which is quite well known. And on top of that, we also do a March acreage survey, and that's what we're here discussing with our discussion topic here today.
Okay. And by the way, USDA comes out with their prospective plantings report at the end of March. Before we jump into the Allendale, for those who don't understand how that prospective plantings report comes out from USDA, is that actual farmer intentions, or is it economists sitting back saying, hey, I think this is what will happen?
That is certainly a farmer survey, and this is the first full farmer survey of the year. Now, we have heard numbers from USDA officials before, in fact, in February at their Ag Outlook Forum, but that's their personal opinion. Really, the first discussion point for our brand new year, it starts with this end-of-the-month report from USDA covering planted acreage of all crops across the nation here.
Okay, so let's jump into the Allendale side. What goes into how you come up with these numbers? By the way, this is not the first year you've done it. I think it's considered the silver anniversary, if that's what we still do for 25. But what goes into how you put these numbers together?
So, like I said before, we've always done this long-running August yield survey, which gets a lot of interest. And for the past 25 years now, we've also conducted a March acreage survey. And this one is conducted pretty much as close as we can to modeling it to what USDA does themselves. So this is a survey of farmers in the first 2 weeks of March. And for ourselves, we do this mostly with customers, and this is in either direct conversations by phone, text, email, or filling out some forms on the web. So either way, we do a large effort in order to try to get as much coverage across the U.S. as possible. Now, for this year's discussion, we covered 26 separate states, and as far as our discussion topics here, we cover corn, soybeans, and the main three discussion points here for wheat as well for the survey.
You know, I've had the opportunity to talk throughout this, since harvest, and even at harvest time, we were starting to project out, hey, what could pencil out here in 2026? We had low prices to end last year. We had high input cost, and it just looked like, especially after Thanksgiving, the markets weren't going to do anything. It just didn't seem like we could move the markets in any direction. Now, since that time, and since a report earlier this year from USDA, the markets have found a little more volatility. Does that play a role, you think, into how farmers perceive what their options are for 2026?
Yeah, it certainly does. And many of the challenges which you highlighted, they've been in play and in front and center to producers' minds here for quite some time. And certainly this does explain why we're discussing just the general story for this 2026 acreage movement. So moving away from corn and into soybeans. The question, especially with these type of surveys done in the first 2 weeks of March, is are we updating this point of view? And certainly for this discussion point for the past 2 weeks, especially with the past week being heavily focused on fertilizer cost, we're hoping to get a good idea on whether producers are maybe perhaps even exaggerating their prior view of moving from corn to soybean. So that's certainly one key issue which we've hoped at least to try to answer with this with the survey.
We're talking with Rich Nelson from Allendale. This is the Agribusiness Report.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Rich Nelson, Chief Strategist with Allendale. Got your new survey numbers out, what you're projecting for 2026. Just looking at fundamentals, though, it seems like that the corn market, the fundamentals have been much more bullish than beans, but not reflected in price.
You know, we can certainly say that there is a fundamental difference between these two crops and their ability to really change the general story. For corn, there are some positives, and we certainly have reduced USDA's prior view of ending stocks a little bit, and maybe some people could argue there might be a few more bushels left to take off, but corn for the old crop side is still kind of stuck in this general lightly oversupplied story. Now, for soybeans, especially in the second half of February, once we had that discussion of perhaps China doing a second round of buying. If they would have done that, that would have allowed that soybean balance sheet to tighten up enough to allow even another surge in soybean prices and moving them firmly into the 12s. So we had the potential to change that soybean story. Now that's maybe changed a little bit here. We have questions regarding that Chinese buy, number one. And on top of that, now we're discussing with articles, information like this survey, perhaps the acreage increase will be even just a little bit more. So number one, soybeans did have the chance to change their general narrative. Looks like that's kind of been taken away from us right now for the short term. So we're still left with hoping for Iran crude and other factors being secondary issues which could support us. And we're not quite sure yet about the biofuel policy, especially as it comes to corn. So we have a lot of things up in the air. We can't quite suggest that the corn story has fundamentally changed, but we did at one point flirt with that story for soybeans.
Well, and you brought the idea of production in there. So let's talk about production. What's Allendale's thoughts here?
So overall forest production, if we take away just a few more acres on corn, we add a few more into soybeans, of course, that does moderately change that production story. On the corn side, 15.7 billion bushels as far as what we're projecting using trend yields, that would be 62 million bushels below USDA's prior point of view. Soybeans, in this case, a 4.5 billion bushel crop. This would be as much as 78 million bushels over USDA's prior February view. So we are further exaggerating this, maybe light tightening on the production side for corn for the new crop side, but soybeans are being hindered a little bit in the short term. So we still have a lot of concerns about really changing this corn story past this point. We probably need a yield issue on top of this to really solidify higher pricing.
Hey, Rich, I want to bring in wheat. Our focus really has been on corn and soybeans, and you look at the number of acres and the production, and obviously so, but when it comes to wheat, we've got some other issues here that can work their way in. For one, we know across the central and southern plains, you might be planting wheat with no real expectation to harvest that wheat, whether it's a cover crop or it's for grazing purposes. We know we have that. Then we work in this idea of weather-related possible losses. Of course, wheat's got, what, nine lives like a cat? So how do you factor all of that in to end up with your final wheat numbers here?
So the good news is, as far as the acreage side, we've got most of it solidified here as far as that winter wheat, which has been planted. And as a small reminder, this winter wheat number, which USDA gave us in January, and what's called that winter wheat seedings, that will be revised here on this March report. And it will be revised, believe it or not, again on that June acreage survey as well. So we're still finding a lot of questions, but at least for the winter wheat discussion, that at least is solved on the acreage side. Now, this brings us to spring wheat, which is a very unique story. And this year's story out of North Dakota is they're trying to not plant wheat at all, that spring product, and they're moving towards corn and soybeans for North Dakota specifically. So our message right now on this side is, number one, a light drop here for winter wheat. Number two, you mentioned the winter issues as far as dryness right now. Just over 50% of winter wheat areas are now currently in D1 through D4 droughts. That's a concern. We have been concerned about the eastern corn belt, where soft red wheat, the Chicago contract, is at. But with the current forecast, maybe we'll receive a few extra rains. So Chicago is now kind of getting off the radar of concern. This leaves our two big questions: hard red wheat, which is not going to get any reprieve from this current dryness, and our questions about spring wheat, where we have a lot of concerns about actual acreage. One thing we found out with our acreage argument here, our survey suggested about 312,000 acres out of what is relatively a small crop. So based on the size of the crop, that's a pretty good decline here.
Talking with Rich Nelson from Allendale on the Agribusiness Report.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Our guest today, Rich Nelson, Chief Strategist with Allendale. We've had a great conversation, Rich. I'm just kind of thinking, if somebody wants to learn more about the numbers we've talked about, or find out more about you or Allendale, can we find you online?
We've got a very simple phone number, 1-800-2-MARKET. And the website is simple as well. Allendale-inc.com is going to be one way. Also, AllendaleHub.com.
Rich Nelson, Chief Strategist with Allendale. I'm Tony St. James. It's the Agribusiness Report.
How would you like to get high-speed internet for your home for less than $2 a day? That's right, for about $50 a month, you'll get lightning-fast internet. Are you paying less than $50 a month right now for your internet? Then call Whole Home Connect right now for blazing fast internet at $50 a month with no price increases, no hidden fees, no contracts, no upfront costs, no equipment fees. It's a great deal. And guess what? You can try it for 15 days. If you don't like it, you get your money back. But you're gonna love it, and you're gonna love the price. Internet for your home for $50 a month. That's less than $2 a day. Plus, no contracts, no upfront costs, no equipment fees, and our 15-day guarantee. Call now. 800-923-9018. 800-923-9018. 800-923-9018. That's 800-923-9018.
It's the Agribusiness Report. At a recent Senate Finance Subcommittee hearing, ranking member from Minnesota, Tina Smith.
I think it's also important to note, in contrast, spending on discretionary programs is actually projected to decline in CBO's latest outlook. But this is not to say that spending doesn't deserve scrutiny as we try to solve this problem. Every dollar that we collect from American taxpayers should be put to good use, and Congress must be willing to cut and reform when it is not. Too often, both Congress and the executive branch fall back on defending the status quo rather than doing the hard work of evaluating what needs to be changed or what old ideas aren't working anymore. And I would be the first to say that not every federal program is working the way that it should. And when we can save money, we should, of course, do that. We have to figure out ways of doing that better.
It's the Agribusiness Report.